Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gaslight. Located on the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard in St. Louis, Missouri. If you haven't been by, you need to go over there and check it out. It's a beautiful recording studio attached to a bar. Favorite band or your band or whatever it might be, you can get inside the studio, record, and then your friends and family and fans can all sit in the bar area and listen as the music is recorded, or as a fan you can watch the bands record, and it's just a really unique experience and something you all should go check out. GaslightSTL.com for all full listing of events. They're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. But yeah, we got a big one coming up on Friday, February 3rd. You can come over there and see Brother Oh Brother and the Manus Brothers performing in studio. So they're going to be recording some cool stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. And also, come hungry, there's Cha Cha Chow next door. You can get yourself some tacos, get a cold drink, and listen to some good tunes. So that's going to be on February 3rd. Again, Gaslight STL, full listing of events, everything there. And come on out to Gaslight. Also want to tell you about my friend's music record shop. They've got a brand new location over in the Zach building, if you haven't been by there. It's located at 3224 Locust Street in St. Louis. And you can visit them online, shop 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. Full records on there. You can go on and see what all the new records coming out. I know this week they got a lot of good stuff coming in from new vinyl from Wilco. They got a Led Zeppelin remastered reprints, Little Fictions, Black Sabbath, Iron Regan, Bright Eyes, The Flaming Lips, Postal Service, The White Stripes, Green Day, and a bunch of other stuff. So come on over to Music Record Shop, located on Locust Street in St. Louis, Missouri. And another big event coming up on the 4th. You can come over and meet Split Lip Rayfield live in store, doing a meet and greet right before their show over at Old Rock House. So come over Saturday, February 4th, and meet Split Lip Rayfield. Again, all listings for your records and events and everything at musicrecordshop.com, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Oh yeah, this is the Macho Man Randy Savage, and you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast. Check it out at rockpaperpodcast.com. Yeah, dig it!
Rock Paper Podcast.
We are right now.
So, in the studio, what you're supposed to say is, we're always rolling.
Yeah.
We always record here.
Let's just run through it once, and, you know, I won't record.
Sure. Sure. And then we get done, we're like, that interview was awesome. Now let's cut it for real.
Right. Yeah, so this is just the run-through.
This is just a run-through interview.
Yeah. Cool.
So don't record this one. And then inevitably, we get done with it, and we're like, that was the best interview I ever did. It's like, well, that's good, because I recorded it.
Right.
And you're like, oh, and we're like, oh, Shane, I didn't realize you'd be recording at this time. And you're supposed to say, like, I know, man, but I record everything, because that's what McIntyre and Preston said to do.
Right.
And then get those jitters out of the way.
Those second two interviews were good, but I think that first one, we kind of nailed it.
We kind of nailed it. I don't know if I really emphasized what I wanted to emphasize on that one. I think I could take a breath at a different spot.
Right.
Let's try it again. I'm going to get some lemon tea.
Yep.
Right. So what were you saying earlier? You said that when people show up, and inevitably, you know it's going to be a bad session. Why?
Are you talking about the lemon tea thing?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The prep.
Yeah, the more stuff people bring with them to prep, I mean, they're setting themselves up for the excuses later. You know, they.
So how you doing today, Preston? You ready to cut these vocals?
Yeah, I'm ready. I mean, I brought my lozenges. I mean, now I need to tell you, Jay. The last couple days, I've had a throat thing, so I don't think that's going to be an issue. But, I mean, it might be, and I got Do you guys have lemon juice here?
Yeah, we got honey and lemon juice.
Oh, you do? Okay, good.
Do we need to get that going?
We'll see.
Inevitably, that's probably going to be.
And then flash forward 2 hours later. This lemon juice isn't the one I usually use, so that's probably why I'm not hitting the notes. And I told you I had that cold thing, you know.
Right. So what we're talking about is like Preston and I were talking about this the other night. It's like inevitably people are self kind of sabotaging, you know, whether they know it or not.
Right.
And they're coming in kind of with excuses already. Like, I don't know, man. I've had this chest cold. For a week, you know, and it feels like it's cleaning up. It's like, dude, like, let's just cancel it now because, right, you are not a gamer. I need somebody that's, like, ready to go, like, thick and thin.
I did,
it's going on my sticker wall.
Nice, yeah, I saw you guys have right some stickers around here.
Oh, is that a Rock Paper Podcast sticker?
It is.
Yeah. I was at a recording session once, and he was, a guy was having trouble hitting that high note, and he's like, I just need a shot of whiskey, so they brought in,
whiskey does wonders.
Yeah, so that did the trick.
Yeah, that's why we're drinking whiskey right now, right. So that we sound good for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm trying. I can't guarantee that 55 minutes from now, it's going to sound good. All right, fact or crap. The real name of the canine star of the classic Lassie Come Home, the name was Pal.
The actual dog from Lassie?
Yeah.
Pal. That sounds, I'll buy it. Yeah, fact. I'm gonna go fact.
I'll say crap.
Crap from Shane here. No, the real name was Pal. Hmm. Fact. Yeah. It's a fact.
We should have put money on
it. As Marissa Tomei would say, it's a fact.
From My Cousin Vinny? Yes. Yeah. I just watched the ending of that. On YouTube.
Best like Supporting Actress ago. Award.
Deserved.
Marissa Tomei. She was great in it. Anyway, Shane, I interrupted you.
How's it going?
No, I'm just excited to be here, guys. This is very cool for me. We are recording this at Sawhorse Studios in St. Louis, Missouri.
Sawhorse.
Yep. One of those.
Yes. It's better than you saying Sawhorse. Sawhorse.
Yeah.
Studios. Yes. Yeah, both. We're in the Studio A right now. And you saw the B room there. Preston kind of runs that one.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful place, man.
It's big. It's cozy. It stretches out. It's big and cozy.
Big and cozy, somehow, both at the same time.
I like that. Well, because we have movable walls, so you could, like, get in a cozy corner. If you
we didn't show him how the walls move.
Right. It's magic.
There's a remote control.
Yeah. But, I've done a lot of these over the time now.
Man.
I'm closing in on almost 3 years of doing this show.
Yeah, like you're closing in on 400 episodes or so. You're in the 350s or
347 at the time we're recording this.
Well, I'm honored honored that you got around to finding us.
Yeah, finally got around.
Well, there's a lot of talent in this town, man.
There is.
I can see why.
Well, I was doing, like I said, I'm doing a lot of these, and like quite a few were like, yeah, we recorded with Jason over at Sawhorse, and I'm like, and the name kept popping up. I was like, I need to...
And they say Preston, too, right?
Yeah, of course. I was like, I got to get over here and, you know, see what it's all about.
So. The one they really want to hang with is you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But...
Trust me.
Like I said, this is exciting for me, like I said, to be over here with you guys. Get to talk shop about the studio and all this recording going on over here. And the guys have been... doing a lot of really great things. So I don't know as much, like I said, Preston's here with us. I don't know as much about some of your stuff, so I would love to learn, man. So you do a little more on...
I do different stuff than Jay, I'd say. Yeah, a lot of pop, hip-hop, R&B, gospel. A little bit of corporate stuff mixed in. Not as much nowadays.
Yeah.
It's fun once in a while. I'll be working in one room and Preston's in the other. And, you know, the doors stay open. And we know when people are here and we know when they're not. And every once in a while I'll hear, like, just the craziest sounds coming out. And over again, the same sound. Like, hello! Hello! And I'm like, what the hell's going on over there? Is he watching, like, the Three Amigos or something? And I go over there and he's like, he's practically pulling his hair. He's like, I'm trying to come up with this crazy character voice for some little toy. It's crazy. And so then you ask if my daughters could come in and if they can sing a song or something.
Yeah, did we ever have them in?
We never had them in.
Hmm.
No, I was too worried.
That stuff's fun. Yeah. There's a couple local toy companies that they'll come up with something and they'll have different buttons on the toy and you got to hit the buttons and I mean, in 2011, I think, they had a local company named Sepia out of Clayton had Toy of the Year with these little Zuzu pets.
Yeah.
And they did well. So they ended up producing like 80 of these things, like 80 different...
A variety of 80 of them?
There was 80 like 80 characters? Total, yeah. Wow. They'd release them at four at a time, and they'd come out with the princess kit that had a castle that you could buy
right.
along with it.
And you've
course.
Got a lot of experience with princess castle sounds and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm an expert. And, yeah, they've done, you know, it's a lot of fart sounds.
That's pretty fun, though, you know. Man. It's crazy. I don't get that stuff.
That's fun. And then there was some karaoke companies that needed the backing tracks. So they'd call you on Tuesday and say, we need these couple of songs, and you've got to reverse engineer stuff. That's fun.
So you'd redo music for pop songs?
Yeah. No, that was a lot of fun.
That would be fun.
It kind of was fun.
Or sometimes they'd call you,
like around Halloween, they'd call you, they'd have a skeleton. They wanted to play Bad to the Bone. But they couldn't get the rights to it, so you'd have to come up with a little like bone song that sounded like Bad
right.
to the Bone, but wasn't.
Right.
Yeah, that stuff was a lot of fun.
We were.
I'm not so good, and you know, not so good, you know.
We were talking a bit off mic about Conan, and he does a bit. It's a like. Basic cable band with you know, and then like it's like
they're great.
Yeah, and where he
Jimmy Vivino,
yeah,
is that his name?
Yeah,
they did a whole player. Album of I just found it like 6 months ago, where the what do they call it? Basic cable band.
Well, yeah,
did an album of Tom Waits covers, and
yeah. Were they happy?
And released it on vinyl. It was
really
awesome. Yeah, it's super cool.
Well, I think he also does the like a Beatles thing too, if like. Fab Foe or something like that kind of thing.
Fab
Foe? Yeah.
Yes. That's, Fab Foe is a bass like player from Dave Letterman.
Letterman?
Yeah.
I only know
Will Lee, the big tall, he's the Fab Foe. All
right.
And do they smoke?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's who it is. Folks, you'll have to call in.
And it's all phones. Beatles covers?
Yeah, they do Beatles covers.
Okay, what number do you call in on?
You call
855-555-5555.
We're standing by waiting.
Yeah. But Conan does this bit, recurring thing where, you know, they would they'd kind of start the song and, like, people were like, oh, yeah, that sounds like Bad to the Bone or whatever. It's like, yeah, you know, you would think that, but actually this is our original song we recorded called, you know, and it was like, it was just that same
just
kind of thing. Like
a little.
Yeah, and yeah, it would, he did that, one of his writers would always come out and he would, like, perform the song and he would just, like, alter the lyrics a little bit and stuff, like having... you know, basically took like a thesaurus and like went through and like, you know, all the different words and stuff like that. And then it was a really funny bit. And he's like,
no, I'll check it out. It sounds fun.
It was all this like, somebody got sued kind of thing.
Sure,
like,
sure. Just close enough right. to be familiar, but
yeah, it was,
not encroaching on copyright.
It was always funny to see what, you know, stupid stuff they would sing instead of that. And
I think it's a great exercise, you know, to kind of, that's why, you know, I don't really diss anybody that's like learning cover songs or things like that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
It's like a great learning experience.
It's cool to reverse engineer stuff that people better than you have done. And, I mean, when I was doing that stuff, there were certain songs, I remember I had to do, some Queen tunes and had to do, not Low Ride. I'm trying to think of the song. Mm-hmm. Deep Purple. What was their song?
Oh, God. Don't even ask.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know,
on the water.
Yeah. No. It wasn't Deep Purple.
But, yeah,
whatever
so
it was. There was stuff that, these songs that you remember sounding huge. And then you have to, like, kind of remake that sound. And it's just like, that's one thin little guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it's not that big sounding. But, like, the song itself, it kind of makes you realize how important the song is, and not always the recording, or how that song has a totally whoever recorded the song kind of gave it that sound.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I find that a lot, I feel. I mean, don't you guys, like, when you go back and you're like, I want to listen back to that Motley Crue tune or whatever it is. You're like, I remember it just being huge. The drums were huge. You can go back and listen to it like, this is, like, paper thin with a lot of reverb.
Right, especially but compared it sounded to, big. Like, rock today.
Yeah, where absolutely.
It's
just,
like,
yeah,
compared giant to rhythm section.
Right, and you're like, why did I ever like this?
Yeah.
Partly, you know, and then you then you start to embrace, like, this is why I did like it. It
That's why people
huge,
bought subwoofers. Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Well, like I said, yeah, I know several of my friends have been over here from Kevin Bowers, Funky Butt Brass Band, Sleepy Rubies, Prevails.
Boom.
That Good Kevin Time Bowers Engineers.
Cool.
Kevin Bowers is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Funky Butt guys are coming in this coming week, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Did you see they were at that Busch Stadium hockey
thing? Yes, they did the blues thing. And in fact, the blues.
That was super cool.
I believe.
They even got like hats made.
Yeah, I don't think I'm talking out of turn, but I believe the blues want them to cut that track. And I think we're going to do that this week.
Really?
They want to cut that track for the blues, St. Louis Blues, which would be awesome. It's
that'd be
it's
awesome,
really
yeah.
great. They're super good.
Yeah, they let them on the ice during the alumni game for. At the Winter Classic, and it was to what Saints go marching in. And,
yeah, that outdoor classic. It was cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
so very very cool opportunity. I thought that was really great of the blues and everybody involved there that they got as much. I mean, they had Marquise Knox also perform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of St. Louis talent represented. And, you know, they could have
gotten anybody. Yeah,
but it was nice to see that they used a
it's
lot
great.
Of
super cool.
It's great when there's a sports team that actually kind of embraces what. The city is, which
sure.
St. Louis Blues is that
yeah.
way. It's like,
yeah.
you're not like the St. Louis Heat, you know, where it like has no association with the city that you live in at all. And so there's a lot of blues in this town, and we get a lot of it coming through here. It's crazy.
I reminds me of one of my favorite stories. But my buddy Will, one night asked me, you know, he started getting into the blues, listening to a lot of stuff, and he was like, hey,
the
man,
blues music?
Yeah. And he was like, is there any good blues in this town? I'm like, jeez. Yeah, man. We have a hockey team named after it. You know, there's a lot of blues history in this town, and like, so I told him.
Yeah, anybody who goes down to like Hammerstones and like the whole
BB's and BB's. All Broadway, or being a Broadway Oyster Bar,
Beale
and all. Yeah, there's great blues bars around this town, but that was just funny to me that like you know just. It's like, yeah, man, you just got to go out and find it.
It's not hard. You can stumble into it pretty easy.
But yeah, it just made me laugh. But yeah, there's a lot of great talent, man. A lot of good music coming out of this town, and I'm just trying to document as much of it as I can and try to spread the good word.
Yeah, dude, you're doing a killer job.
Thanks, man.
I mean, you're getting all the right people, pushing all the right buttons.
Yeah.
It's great.
Are you,
Yeah, speaking of Funky Butt, they've been down here for a lot of sessions the last year, I feel like.
Well, like the horn sections and
the
stuff.
The horn sections,
yeah,
mostly, yeah.
We'll hire them in to do some stuff, and sometimes they just come in to do
You said
stuff.
You hear stuff from my room on the other side. There's times I walk in and I just hear like awesome horns happening over here, kind of through the wall, and I mean, just they're, like, oh, I guess Funky Butt's in today.
Right. They're good. It's great when you can have like a clique of individuals. It is fun when you watch those old music documentaries and there's always like a clique of individuals that seem to kind of gravitate either around a city or a studio or just a music genre, and it's the Funky Butt horn guys are just rooted in it. And it's not just because they're horn players. Like, Ben Reese, the sax player, is, like, a great bassist, plays upright killer. He's a good songwriter. Aaron Chandler is a great singer and songwriter. And Adam Hookey, the trumpet player in there, I just cut a record with him that has less horns on it than you would ever imagine. It's pretty funny.
He wrote the album, didn't he?
He wrote the whole album, man.
Yeah,
he had, like, Emily Walls.
There's a lot of cool stuff.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he called me up and he's like, hey, man, I want to do a record. But not the record that you're thinking. And the first thing I'm thinking is, you know, of course, is like, oh, we're getting some horn-infused record of funky kind of. No, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some horns on it, but I'm going to sing some, and some of them aren't going to have any horns on it. It was great.
I remember there were nights where I was kind of shutting down that side and getting ready to go home, and I'd wander over here and see what Jason was up to late at night after some of those, some of his sessions, and expecting to hear a bunch of horn stuff, and you'd be like, check out what we got today. And
you'd
play it. Like, whoa, that's super cool. Not what I expected.
And it's great. All those players really gravitate towards each other, and there's a lot of SIUE jazz students
right.
or jazz teachers, really, that for former students that are coming up that really stay in good cliques together. And whether they play in bands together or not, that's not really the case. They kind of just tap on each other when they need, like, you know, Pops will come in and do some keyboard stuff, or Miles Vandeveer comes in and does some drum stuff. Sometimes he does some engineering here. So there's a good clique of people that kind of fold through here. Zebediah Briskovich, Zeb, is a smoking bass player. And it's like, anytime you know those guys are showing up, you're like, well,
I called him in once, and he killed it.
Yeah, it's like, well, this isn't going to be a quick, this isn't going to be a short or a long session. You're like, this is going to be kind of one and done. And that's where you like, well, let me make sure I kind of know what I'm supposed to be doing in here. Because when I hit record, that first pass is like, oh, let's just do that run through like we talk about. There is no run. The run through for them is kind of like, well, I got 90% of it. any suggestions? And you're like, dude, that was killer. Like, where did you fuck up?
Right.
So, like, I get done with sessions with those guys a lot of times, and like, the song ends, it's like, and it gets quiet. And one of the first comments out of my mouth, and a lot of people will know this, is like, any confessions? Like, because I couldn't tell that anybody really screwed it up.
Right.
Like, I'm hoping that you guys were like, oh, yeah, they raised their hand. They're like, third course, I kind of miffed going in. And inevitably, we'll listen back, and musically, it totally works. They may just, you know, hit the third instead of the first, you know.
I don't remember which session it was, but I think Nate Hershey came in to play B3 on, was that...
It
Jeremiah Johnson, maybe? No.
He played with Jeremiah,
It might have been on Jeremiah's record, and he ran through it, and it was like, well, that's a smoking solo.
I think we're done.
And he's like, no, give me another, and rolled it again. It's like, well, okay, that one was better. Awesome. Like, we got it. And he's like, no, give me another. And
right.
I mean, it's just like, those guys are...
Yeah, a lot of that that crew, like, whether it's like, you know, Nate Hershey comes in, like, a lot of these... I call them mercenaries as a joke. Like, they come in, they're session players that you're like, I know I need, like, Tony Barbata or Joe Meyer or Nate Hershey or Dave Gorelli or, you know, the Funky Butt guys to play horns or Vince Farvel to play guitar. And when they come in, you're just kind of like, I don't really need to give you a direction. Just play what comes naturally. And almost every time, that first time is pretty much gold. Right. And, like, they can improve upon it. But I'll still keep going back to that first take and like, what was the magic in that one? And like, I mean, we cut a track, but I'll never forget this one. Ben Reese came in to do a sax part, and the story was, it was a full like 6 or 7 piece horn section, charted music, and he's the tenor player on it. And they were all smoking players and they killed it. And the producer was like, well, you know, I'm like, so what's happening in this musical section here? He's like, well, that's going to be a sax solo. And I'm like, oh, okay, so should we go to it and let Ben rip one? Oh, no, well, you know, I've got another guy in mind to do this sax part. And I'm like, let's just let Ben take a pass at it real quick. I mean, it's going to, the time we're talking about
not?
It, we could, yeah, right. we could cut it in the time we're talking about it right now. And I'm like, hey, Ben, man, you mind hitting these 16 bars real quick? He's like, no, man, let me do it. And he does it. And we all turn around. It was like one of those moments where, like, halfway through, you turn around to each other and your eyebrows are up and you're like, this is pretty fucking... Is everybody else here in this in here? And it gets done and he's like, give me one more. And so I look at the producer and he's like, yeah, give him another one. And so the music director's there and he's like, dude, you don't lose that first one. And I'm like, don't worry, it's not going anywhere. We do a second one. We do a third one. And, you know, and we all realize we're spent on it. Let's move on. That was cool. Thanks, Ben. You know, we go on. I'm like, so we got those. It took us all of like 3 minutes to cut those three solos, you know. We got them. You can bring your guy in. It didn't take any time, right? So other dude comes in, and I made it a point not to play the previous solo.
No.
Right? So dude comes
Don't
in,
even
plays
put it in
it.
His head.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The solo doesn't exist. So it plays, and it gets done. First, second, third pass gets done. And we look at the producer. I look at the music director. And he's like, he tells the talent, hang on a second. He's like, cut the headphones. And we cut the headphones. He's like, let's hear Ben's again. And we play it back, and eyebrows go up again. And it's like, dude, it's pretty cool. And producer comes on the mic, and he's like, that's cool, thanks, man. We'll see what we can do with it, you know. And ultimately, Ben's ended up on the record, you know. Yeah. And it's like those guys come in and kill it. And it's across the board, man. It's when Dave Grelli or Nate Hershey or Barbata, a lot of those times, it's like their first impression. They're such good players that when you start telling them what to play, you're really kind of fucking with the colors of Picasso,
right?
In a way, you know, it's like, hey, Picasso, could you get a little more detail in there? He's like, are you? It's not me at that point, you know. So it's cool.
Yeah.
One day you're gonna hear another song that he recorded, and it's the exact same solo, and it's like that guy. He just plays it in different keys each time.
Oh gosh, I don't even want to talk about, but I will. Twist my arm. Oh, Shane's twisting my arm here.
Shane, get off him.
So there's been times when I've had some players in that are in the digital domain with their keyboards. Oh. And it's fine. You know, there's I call them slabs.
It depends how much they know.
Oh, well, this particular player was a great player. And but the song comes up. What key is this in? Oh, it's in the key of D. He's like, okay, cool. Plays this shit. And it kills it, right? Second song comes up, we need him to play on. What key is this in? It's in G. Goes to his keyboard, transposes it.
That's what I do.
And right.
Yeah.
I hear you. But does it, but then the same licks come out. And it's like, you know, those licks are practically impossible to play in G.
Sure. If you're trying to roll down off a black key, certain stuff.
And it's like, if someone... You know, and I'm back and forth on it. I'll fuck with pitch a lot, like on tape machines and stuff like that. But it's like, I won't say it's cheating. It's taking advantage of your technology, which we all do. Which we all do.
Right.
We'll say it right now. We all do it.
But working within limitations can...
is kind of what makes the fun parts happen.
It can inspire a certain type of creativity if I'm forced to play in like F sharp. Which I hate playing in F sharp, but if I'm forced to play in F sharp, then yeah, I might come up with something that I wouldn't have.
Yeah. What Preston said.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, that's. I mean, just listening to you guys talking already.
Do you play an instrument?
No, I don't play. So
you don't play at all.
I'm just a big fan. I just.
Don't start that.
All right.
It'll ruin you.
But that's what I mean.
Kinda, yeah.
But listening to you guys.
Oh, I know some video guys who. Talk about watching movies and being ruined by, like, they're always looking at the lighting. And, they could have shot it from a different angle or different... Right. It's like, man, I'm glad I don't know about that.
I didn't like
stuff.
The tint they put on the whole scene. Everything's blue.
Right. It's like, I don't want to know. I don't want to notice that.
Right.
Well, so, you guys had a lot of music knowledge before... I mean, as for instruments and stuff before becoming... get behind the board and stuff?
I play a little bit of everything. You did keys, right?
I grew up playing piano and I had a poor teacher, and that's I think a problem.
Really?
Yeah, I had an old lady teacher and sat you down.
Trying to do classical or just
like hiya kichimendu, I am the medicine man, you know, like the basic stuff.
And you're just like, I'm not.
And
into
I was just like, geez, when am I going to learn Van
you're not
Halen?
Into the medicine,
you know.
Man?
Yeah, right. And so, and this was like when I was 8 and 9 years old.
Right.
But I loved the keyboard. I liked being able to, the tactile surface. I liked hitting stuff, you know. And so I played clarinet and concert band.
Really?
And moved to sax.
And then you played clarinet.
And, yeah.
Clarinet and sax, same fingering, right? Or
similar.
Am I wrong?
Similar.
Okay.
Very similar, yeah.
Going back to my middle school
right.
band.
And then gravitated in high school to like percussion and marching band. And I played timpani and xylophone in the marching band and stuff. But I partly because I don't like being on stage.
We
I don't
need
like
to set up timpani here. I think.
They're kettle drums. Kettle drums.
Kettle drums.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have the pedal?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, our big thing, it was Rockwood School District in 90 to 92. I graduated in 92. And our big theme, we went to like the, we played the Orange Bowl in Florida.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. It toured Walt Disney.
Wait, from middle school or high school?
High school.
Okay.
Marching band was in high school. So,
I know that. That's cool.
So we did, our big thing was the Star Trek theme, you know. But it was fun. I enjoyed it just as a pit player, which is the pit is timpani, xylophone, crash cymbals, things like that you don't march on. And
yeah,
I like that
move, yeah.
Because I don't like to be on stage. I played in garage bands, synthesizer as a keyboard kid.
That's why drums are great in general, because you're in the back of the stage in the dark.
Right.
Nobody's looking at you.
Right. But you, I walk in and Preston, like today, I walked in and you were woodshedding on the kit. Like a shuffle beat.
Well, Tony Barbata's been. Well, I won't say has been, but he posted like. There's a thing going around the drummer circles that's like try to play this beat, like beat of the day.
Oh, okay,
like
right.
So
right.
Like,
I've seen Tony do that
for drummers. It's like here's the shuffle that I'm trying to do, and here's my take on it. And somebody posted that today, and
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm nowhere near him, but
dude,
but it's fun to try. You know,
sure.
And trying to keep that hi-hat foot going, that, man, God, that's.
Drummers blow my mind.
There's certain beats that I can do fine, and the second I try to add that hi-hat foot doing the quarter notes, man, just everything else goes out the window.
Yeah.
It's rubbing your tummy and patting your head times
and your feet have got to be doing something then, too.
Sure, you know, well, right.
Like, in time with it. I feel like I have to mention it. A buddy of mine, Matt Higginbotham, who passed away a little over a year ago, he was a drummer for a band I worked with, Colony.
Sure.
He's come in quite a bit back in the day, and he'd play on session work here and there. One of the best drummers I've ever heard because of his limb independence. I don't know if even that's a word.
Yeah.
But there's stuff that this guy does, would do, like on the hat, that only a few dudes around town I know.
I mean, so Scott I feel like Bryan blows me away with his
limb independence. Yeah, Scott Bryan's another
guy. Like the way, like, one thing can be doing a and certain groove and the other hand's doing something.
It blows my mind. And there's nothing worse than knowing it can be done, seeing someone that can do it, and then saying, hey, Shane, so there's this beat I want you to do, and it's this kind of this thing with the hands, and then this with the foot, and then this with the other foot, and then this with the other hand, and then your dick is slapping this, and then you're beatboxing with your mouth. And like, Hicko
and all six
off.
Of those things are simple. But try
right.
to do them
independently.
Along. Independently, you
right.
can do any of them.
Right.
And slap your dick on anything. And
you're right. You're right.
Right.
And so Hicko would do these things, and it was like, oh, no big deal. And Matt would probably chew gum at a time just to fuck with you, you know? And he'd be doing these just random things. And certain people out there know Matt Higginbotham, and they know the shit that he's talking about. And it was humorous because... Jeremy Miller is another drummer in town, a good friend of mine, that has had to sit in for Matt Higginbotham live shows once in a while, and so he's listened to the records that
Big
Matt's
shoes to
cut.
Fill.
And he's like, yeah, he's like, dude, I don't even know how Matt does some of that shit, so I'm just going to do it my way.
Yeah, we're going to move that to the toms now we're doing this.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's just sometimes it's not in their wheelhouse. That's why, like, you know, certain drummers you call for speed metal, and other guys you call for shuffles. You know,
sure.
To where a lot of folks around town think that, like, just call a session drummer, and it's like, no, man, it's like the same reason you
go
to studios.
Well, it's an artist. It's the same reason you would choose one person to paint a picture versus like if
right.
you want
go
Picasso,
to a recording
cool,
studio,
go to him.
Right.
But if you want,
right, if you yeah. want it blurry, then you know we need.
Van Gogh?
Van Gogh, yes.
I saw an eyeglasses ad the other day that was a Van Gogh painting, but that had a pair of eyeglasses, and it was super clear through the...
That was that's awesome. Yeah. Really clever.
Yeah.
Now we know what he was thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's... So you guys are... both seems like, you know, both of you guys had a extensive knowledge of learning instruments throughout school and stuff. So
well, another... Well, I mean, just to further that, Preston... Pretty much plays everything.
Yeah,
I walk in.
I play everything okay, but
right.
The,
well, you
the
play
musicians
your
you
limits.
Bring in make me feel bad about myself.
Well, here's the thing. Here's Preston's ace in the hole that I will never ever have. I will always have to call a session player. Almost always, I would say. Maybe there's some organ stuff or piano stuff that I could pull off or whatever. Occasionally, I've done basic guitar stuff, but. Preston and like a Scott Bryan's another guy.
Sure.
Not I won't say you guys are in the same category. We both know that Scott Bryan is just smoking.
Yeah.
But Preston,
thank you.
And Scott Bryan both. No, stop. But you're way above me. But
no, I could potentially be a band by myself, which I have to do for people sometimes. If people come in and need a bunch of stuff played, I don't have to call anybody for
right.
the most part.
Right. Well, you're smart enough that you'll play within your wheelhouse.
Yes.
Right.
Well, And honestly, a lot of the best players I know, the older they get, the more simple they keep it. So,
right. I've always joked with bass players, you don't get paid by the note.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, some of these it's not just bass players. It's drummers, too, sure. and guitar players. It's like,
yeah,
it's not a competition.
Players.
Dude, I love a good bass player. They can change a song.
Absolutely.
A bass player can change a song. Yeah. Anyway, you're a great musician. You come in every once in a while to cap this. Every once in a while I come in and Preston's woodshedding on a different instrument, and that's what's fun about it. I'm walking in and I'm like, oh, who's playing with Preston today? And I walk in and it's Preston.
I finally gave
he's
up
like,
on
my
the
guy's
accordion.
Not here yet, so I'm learning this new part.
I haven't touched that accordion in a while.
You play the accordion really well. You
was,
blew me away on that.
I was trying for a while. It was getting there.
You were hot for a minute.
Man, such a clunky instrument.
It's a weird thing. It's one of those pat your head, rub your belly.
Absolutely, because it's one side's buttons and one side's notes.
It's vertical piano that I'm not quite comfortable with.
Well, some of those buttons...
And I don't understand the chord progressions.
The buttons work in fifths. You know your circle of fifths?
Yeah.
Kinda? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. sometimes... If you want a note that's lower, you have to go up. So sometimes, if you depending on the pattern,
so it's in that square, they repeat themselves. They repeat themselves.
They do repeat themselves. Yeah.
Like
once you learn it, you kind of got it. And they repeat them. It's also universal depending on what key you're in. So that makes it easy, because, like I said, on F sharp on piano is kind of hard to play in for me. On an accordion, it doesn't matter what key you're in, you just move with the pattern.
Right.
Which is kind of like a guitar. Do you play guitar at all?
No, I play zero instrument, yeah.
A lot of pop guitar is just what they call a bar chord, right. So as long as you know your majors and minors, you can move up and down the neck pretty easy. Yeah, you can play most pop songs, but, why are we talking about accordions?
I do think it's pretty cool that when you said accordion, I thought of is Weird Al is putting out a box set.
I love Weird Al, and it comes in the shape of accordion. Yeah,
I thought that was pretty neat that he
a box accordion.
It's an accordion of is it not vinyl? I think it's.
Yeah, I believe it's.
Is it called accordion to
according to Al?
Accordion to Al.
Yeah, he's putting all of his records on vinyl and releasing it in an accordion.
That's
box
pretty set. Cool. I already got them all though, so I don't need to buy it.
That dude's
I'm a Weird Al fan.
Genius. Yeah.
I went to a Weird Al show. I'd say 2.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago or something. He was at that St. Charles
Family place. Arena.
Yes, the Family Arena
sounds like a turnoff.
Yes, it does. It was amazing how I don't think I've ever been to a show with such a diverse crowd. It was old people, young people, black people, Asian people, just like little kids loving it, like grandpas loving it, like just. It was really cool.
He's terrific. I mean, that guy has weathered the test of time and hadn't really had to do a damn thing different.
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever the local, or not the local, but the kind of the national music scene dictates.
Right.
There was an interview with him not that long ago, and he's like, I can't. In with the way the music industry is now, it's all singles. He said he's not going to do albums anymore. It's just going to be singles, and
he'll probably have more
interesting
work to do.
What's that?
He'll probably have more work to do.
Why is that?
Because there's, you know,
he said by the time that he gets around to putting all those parodies on an album, that those songs are old because
right.
internet
oh,
makes things old in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He's like, if it's more than 2 or 3 weeks old, it's
let
old
me tell
news.
You something. My opinion is of modern pop music is that it's old after the first chorus.
Oh yeah.
I mean, dude, it comes around and it's like the song, new pop song, it's all remain nameless. It's
sure.
like it is the same verse 3 times in a row. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and the chorus is the same chorus, obviously.
Well,
too.
That's
but
how
I'm
it
like,
gets in your head.
Right, yeah. right. And it's just like, okay, so please bring us back to the Beatles' 2-minute song then.
So do you feel like with the clientele you work with, is it moving towards singles? Or are people still focused on full albums?
I mean, the majority of folks that I work with are A, band-oriented individuals, right?
Right.
And so, therefore, they always have generally a collection of songs.
Right.
And I...
Have you seen the song count get lower, maybe? Like EPs rather than LPs?
So, Brian Chappell is one of these artists that I work with in this band Divine Sorrow. And he's jokingly called me, instead of a producer, he calls me the reducer. Because I always try to have a band do less than more.
Sure.
If a band calls me...
Put more
me,
time into less stuff.
Yeah, pretty Kinda. Much, pretty okay. much. I mean, I just feel like a band comes in and they're like, "We've got 12 songs. We want to do a record." I was like, "Cool, so 10 songs. Let's talk about that." And they're like, "Yeah, so," and they're confused. You know, they're like, "So okay, yeah, so like those 10 songs. I'm like, great. So let's talk about these 5 songs we're going to do."
Right.
And because inevitably, by the time and a lot of groups that I'm working with right now, it takes some time to get through 10 tunes. If you want to do them to like maybe a more produced standard or you want to
what I call backdoor a lot of parts. Like, right. You come in and, like, you play as a band, but you want to refine the guitar parts, so you wind up overdubbing those, and then it takes time to get that guy to come back in. And then you got vocals and background vocals, and then there's the mix and the premix and then the remix. And so doing that over 10 songs, it really
adds up
at hours and time and motivation. You know, it can be unmotivating sometimes when you have so many songs to swallow, but it's stretching out over a long period of time. Right. I would be I feel more content with projects that are, if they're 10 songs, they are boom, boom, boom. Like the Ha Ha Tonka record we did was like over 2 weeks, we cut like 10 songs.
When was that?
Year ago.
Were they the group who slept here? They kind of kind of crashed here those couple days?
They've always been welcome. I've known them since 2000, back in the old Sonic Temple days in Union.
That has to be over a year ago. It was only a year.
So it was November last year that they came in initially. And then they had to come back in January.
Time flies, okay.
Yeah, and that was the same time I was cutting the Kevin Bowers record, too. That was a great Thanksgiving winter break. It was awesome. There was like such good music in this building for me. They come in. It's hard when bands come in and they want to do 10 songs. Because part of me is like, okay, well, so is this kind of, we're cutting a live project? You know, meaning, you know, there's like a 4 or 5 piece band, and the majority of it's going to be kind of this live ruckusy kind of rock and roll vibe or bluesy vibe, like a Jeremiah Johnson or... it'd be like even Kevin Bowers or Funky Butt Cuts Live, some of these power trios, Fire Dog. They come in and they'll knock out a lot of rhythm tracks in a weekend, you know, in 2 days. And then we have a lot to build off of. And then there are some bands that come in, and I love working with them when it's just like, we're going to come in on the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, or just Tuesday, Thursday type of thing, and we're just going to cut... you know, 3 or 4 songs, and we're going to concentrate on those. And I like EPs because I feel like it's a better capture of time, because it maybe only takes, you know, a few weeks to a few months to knock out 5 songs. And that's a great capture of where the band is now.
Sure.
But when you start working on 10 songs, and then they have the wherewithal or the want or the desire to stretch it out over a year, you start to forget like where your motivation was for the initial tracking of it.
Sure.
Or, like, what was my approach initially? Initially, I wanted to do this really dry sound. And now I've kind of forgotten that, because it's, like, it's 8 months later, right. And now we're working on vocals for it, something like that.
Now I'm into reverb.
Yeah, like, I got this new box I want to use, right. Or whatever, you know, or fuck it. You pull it up, and you listen to it, and you're like, wow, I'm kind of in a different mind space for mixing.
Let's re-record it.
Right? So there's a lot of trust that you have to have either with yourself or the musician. And so a lot of the live bands that I work with, you know, to segue into that is like, you take that first take. And so your first impression a lot of times is the right impression. Mm-hmm. So I try not to vary too much from that. A lot of the times, and the Kevin Bowers record is a great example of it, the mix that we did at the end of, we did a 5-day week and cut like 8 or 9 songs. And this is with, like, musicians. Kevin was crazy with his schedule. He'd come in, he's like, okay, at 1 o'clock, we're going to get Phil Ring in to do guitar parts. And then Pops is coming in at 2:30 to do these 3, you know, organ parts. And then Adam Hookey's coming in to do some vocals and some trumpet parts or whatever. Big Mike's going to sing with Paige Brubeck. And that was a great meeting. But that's the one I'm talking about, is this version that Big Mike Aguirre and Paige Brubeck did on this song. It was like this bossa nova kind of beat, super hip. We cut the track as like a quartet in less than an hour. And it was like, okay, it's an instrumental now. When Paige and Big Mike come in, we'll cut the vocals. I'm cool. So that was like Thursday evening. Friday, we had, you know, 10 songs worked up. I was like, okay, Kevin, before we leave, you know, let me make some rough mixes of the tracks. So we'd make these rough mixes of the tracks. And he goes home with them. And he's like, dude, there's very little to do with this one, you know, or any of these tracks. And it was so cool that we wound up cutting it in French, too. I didn't realize that Big Mike spoke French instead of Paige. So we cut it in French, too.
That's awesome.
It was really cool. And we did a scratch mix, a rough mix, and that. And then we got back together weeks later, and we tried to kind of best it. We tried to cut it again. We tried to do better than it. We played it the same way, same players. they all kind of listened to the part again, and we tried to recut it. And Kevin looks at me and he goes, dude, from the first like two bars, I just still like that reference mix that we did. You know, can we use it? Absolutely, we can use it, man. I'm like, it's a high quality version. We can use it. It was almost like he was asking me, like, is it legal?
Is it okay?
Is it legal? Can we get away with scratch mix? You know,
sure.
And I'm like, there's nothing that would make me happier than to get away with the mix that we just kind of threw up at the end of the day. It was our first impression. It was the one we liked the best. Those are the ones that are fun. It's when you go back and try to better it that you it becomes a rabbit hole. You know?
It can. There's also times where I think, at least in my world, people come in and there might be a new idea and they're like trying different things and they're reading the words off a sheet and, you know, you come back to mix it later and it's like, you know what, now that you've had some time to listen to it, how about before we spend a bunch of time mixing, just go back in the booth, just sing it again real quick. We're not going to take much time on it. Now that you've had whatever you don't like about what you did before, I'm going to trust you. You're going to change that. And
yeah, like, I mean, you're gonna, they feel it more.
Sometimes people nail it on the first take. I mean, they need
probably
that.
Probably a lot of the time.
Most of the time, really. But I think there's something to be said. Do you work with a lot of people who have home setups now? Now that like home studios are more of a affordable option for bands?
Somewhat. There's a lot of times I get people in that are, they'll work up the song at home. Mm-hmm. Like John Heiser, who you had interviewed before. Yeah. He does some freelance work here. He'll rent the place for like...
I don't care for him.
He's a prick.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. I love you,
no,
John.
Will you take that out?
No. Okay. We don't have that.
We gotta edit that out. Clap. 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 Okay. Edit. John Heiser's a great guy.
Love him.
Comes in, but what I like about him is that he comes in, he's prepped. He because he knows what he can accomplish here. I've cut like a full length record with him that was months long, and he's a good songwriter and he's got a great production tactics and knows what he wants to get out of it. Problem he has sometimes is like translating it and getting it across to other people. So we've armed him with the ability to kind of come in and we'll assist him and get him set up, and then peek in on him and say, "Oh, you might want to change this up? Do we want to do this and fuck with this and mess with this?" So he's probably one of the best cases that of people that come in with third party stuff. It's rare that people come here, cut, and then go home and do vocals. I don't get a lot of that. I get a lot of like people that come in with scratch songs, maybe to a metronome,
and then rebuild.
Yeah, and then they build it, they backdoor it, or what I call. Yeah, sure. So we'll do a rhythm section here with their scratch guitar and vocal, and then like people like John may take it back to their place and still do guitar and vocal there. It's a lot easier to do guitars and bass, you know, with a close mic and you know, at home or in your a simpler setup, we could say.
Mm-hmm.
Drums are a little more
difficult. Well, in a setup that you have unlimited time.
Right. Right. But a lot of these people that come in are hiring drummers out or hiring rhythm sections.
Okay.
You know, Joe Meyer gets hired a lot. Tony Barbata, you know. So those guys come in. And Miles Vandeveer.
Yeah.
They'll come in and their gig is to just backdoor drum parts, you know. And then it leaves. And sometimes I never see it again. Sometimes it comes back because of the scratch mix. And they're like, dude, like, whatever
and
you did on this.
We can't get it to sound.
Yeah, like, whatever you did on the vocal. Like, Miles nailed it, too. He was like, dude, can I borrow that mic that we use? And I'm like, I can give it to you for a week. He's like, we can't get that sound, man. Or the scratch mixes. We're just going to come back and mix it with you.
I saw that 87 laying around here the other day.
It's back. It's back. I want to get another shot.
Cool.
I get hot and cold. I don't know about you, Preston, but I get hot and cold on gear. Like, I love something. I get it, and I want to use it all the time, and then I'm like, it's not practical for me, or it takes too long to master it,
right,
or to figure it out.
Sure. Too many buttons.
Too many buttons, or like, just the surface, the square-inch surface space. I need...
Well, that all that 500 series stuff. Like, I'm sure it's awesome, but...
Yeah.
I don't like... It's just nice to be able to reach back and grab a big knob.
Yeah. Knobs. Tweaking knobs.
Tweaking knobs.
I wanted to ask, you know, I was thinking of, like, obviously you guys, several different bands, several different genres and everything, and, like, do you guys have, like, a biggest do's and don'ts of bands coming in or anything like that, you would give
Don't
advice?
Don't show up early.
Don't show up
Not early. Not too early.
Not too early.
Too early. Like, what would you say? 10? 10 minutes?
If you show up 25 minutes early, I'm not happy.
Right. And it's because...
I'm getting coffee on. I'm setting up.
Right. He's getting coffee and setting up. He's prepping for the session.
Sure.
No, but it is kind of true.
Do's and don'ts.
Do's and don'ts.
New drum heads, new guitar strings, stuff like that.
Okay. Well, some shit.
I mean that's on a bunch of those like Guitar Center lists.
Right. Yeah. And man, I've had times with like I've had a dude call me up and was like, "So like you have guitars there, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, but it's probably best like you bring your setup, your thing."
Right.
You know, and I've
That's a good example of somebody setting themselves up to complain. It's like, "Oh, well, your guitar is not quite like
right.
mine."
And you know, and so it comes in and like their guitar is just strung differently and maybe they don't even realize it. Like they're just wonderfully naive, you know, beautifully naive, you know, but it worked for them. Mm-hmm. You know, and so then they come in, or a drummer comes in, and he's like, "Well, you got a house kit there," and I'm like, "Yeah, I've got a Ludwig Vistalite, which is like,
awesome.
It's awesome, but it's a big, slow, tubby machine.
That is not a one size fits all drum kit,
right? It doesn't have like a mounted.
Do you know the Vistalites?
They're like a clear plexiglass drum from the 70s. You know, they maybe still make them. There's a Fives.
They're boomy.
They're great. It's they're cool. big and they project, but they're big drums. And they don't set up normally like other kits do, like where maybe, you know, drummer A has his Pearl Export or whatever, and he's got his toms and they're mounted on top of the kick drum, like in arms. Well, the Vistalite that we use isn't like that. It has to set up on a more open platform, so it's on a snare stand. So it's just a big, wide-open thing, and like the pedal that I use is a DW5000. It's a different type of pedal. So...
I don't have any clue how drummers don't bring their own pedals sometimes. Like, those pedals are so touchy.
Right, I always preface it when someone says, like, "Can we use your rigs?" Or, "Can we use your... You got 100... We've got probably over 25 guitar amps here, you know, and two drum kits, probably 15 different snare drums, a boatload of guitars and effects pedals and all that.
Tons of stuff.
I still tell every band that wants to come in, yes, we have these things, but bring your shit.
Right.
And we're going to set up your shit, and we'll supplement with other stuff. A, it takes more time for you to get to know a JCM-800 if you've only used, you know, a 5150 head or a Voodoo head or whatever you're using. And or the same thing with the
You're
drum
being generous to this hypothetical guitar
right.
player. Like, this guy has a bunch of really good stuff.
Right.
He has a 5150 or a JCM.
Right, or like, whatever your run-of-the-mill, you know, mom-and-pop shop, small-budget guitar amp type thing. And then they come in and they're like, I've seen, you know, Dimebag Darrell use this. And it's like, you have no clue the dragon that you were about to unleash on yourself. You know, and then they get lost in it, and then they're out of their comfort zone, or they're playing inappropriately, or it's not the sound that they're used to, and dynamically it's not what they're used to. So bring in your own shit. That's a do.
Right.
And then let the studio, if they've got gear, let them supplement for you. After we've heard the song, after we've heard what you're doing, you know, like the thing that engineers would say would be like, you know what you should try is this,
right.
You know, and then you let them go for it. It's, you know, it's another rabbit hole. Type of thing.
What's a don't?
A don't is don't. It depends on the band, but don't stay out too late the night before.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Be ready for a good working day.
Yeah,
I won't say a long day. It doesn't have to be a long.
Well,
day.
A lot of times,
but be prepared to put in your 2 cents. Have your mind ready.
I'm skeptical whenever I book any sessions over 5 hours. I kind of try to feel them out a little more because I feel like around 5, 6, 7 hours people start getting tired, hungry, like it's
disinterested.
Like, if you're doing 3-4 songs, I don't want the 5th song to sound just like forced.
That's like,
you know,
mixing,
a lot of
people
start with a lot of energy and then by the 5th song they're just kind of going through the motions. It's like, let's if you're doing a session that long, I feel like it's good to have different people go. I don't know. I mean, you work with a lot of like a drummer in all day, and drums.
Right.
I feel like, especially. I mean, it's physically challenging. So
it amazes me sometimes that these guys can pull off
like,
you know,
hard drums
all
day.
Yeah. It, well, because
rough.
When you think about it, it's like, you know, I'll get like a quartet in or something like that, and you know, let's say we got a guitar, bass, and drums. Let's just say it's that simple. But they want to come in for, you know, a day or two,
mm-hmm.
a couple full days, we'll call it, which sure. to me are like 8 to 10 hours.
Right.
That doesn't mean we need to be recording for 8 to 10 hours.
Yes.
But I feel like the bands think they need to be recording for 8 to 10 hours. And to me, it's after about hour eight, I might start turning into a pumpkin at that point. Like, don't ask for, like, really pointed decision making at that point. I could almost be what I call in capture mode.
No,
like I'll record all you want, but when you start asking me to like have opinions about altering what you're doing, I don't know that I could make a smart decision, right. an educated decision on that. And I let them know that, you know, at some point I turn into a pumpkin, you know. So I don't like to start.
Do you try to divvy the time up like throughout the day to where you get like time to edit and then somebody else goes in time to edit, like to where you get breaks from like capture mode?
It depends.
Because capture mode, you have to be focused, you know, like it takes a lot of focus to, sure, you can say any confessions, but
right.
at the end of the day, I mean, you're also part of the process.
Right. Well, something I've always learned from Preston is the volley with a question idea. It's like you get done, let's say you're on hour six and right. you get a brand new song they're tracking and blah 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 blah, and they're done. They're like, what do you think, Preston? And it's not like the Any Confessions thing. It's like, is there anything else that needs to be added to this? It's like you volley with a question in a way. You're kind of like, what else is happening with this song? I'm not going to even discuss what just happened. I want to know what the kind of the end game is of this. I work backwards.
That's
a lot
when you
of times.
Pull out your oblique strategies.
Oblique strategies is a good one. But I always, so bands come in and I tend to work backwards from the day or the end goal. So I'm
pulled
like,
it out of the middle of the deck, same card you just put.
Weird.
Yeah.
Fact of crap?
Yeah.
I'll be ready for one. So I always wind up, you know, even though I know the game plan going in, I communicate really well with the bands that come in. Like, okay, so what are we doing on Thursday night? You know,
sure.
Oh, we're going to cut vocals of this, or we're going to mix this or whatever. So I know that when they come in, that's our intention. But still, when they come in, I still let them know that, like, okay, like, when do we want to be finished up by tonight? Well, we got until about 10 or 11 o'clock, you know, and we're always pretty lenient with like the goal. We want everybody to be happy, but we also want
to find a good stopping point, and whether
right.
that's on the hour.
But
or
don't
not.
You find that like your stopping point tends to be from what the goal is and working backwards from it? It's almost like, okay, well, we want to be done. You know, we want to put in a full day and we want to cut four songs. It's like, okay, so we're a trio. We got four songs to cut rhythm tracks to, and we want to be out of here by 10 or 11 o'clock. So by about 8 o'clock, guys, we need to be kind of wrapped with the recording process so that we can listen and kind of discuss what the next steps are in our record-making process, right?
Yeah.
Or any cleanups that we need to do or any ideas that we're going to talk about. And those are some of the fun ones. So, like, we'll start at, like, noon, and we'll go to maybe 10 o'clock, right, or probably 11. But by about 8 o'clock, I need to be in not shut-down mode, but, like, please don't introduce any new thought processes to me. Like, I don't think I could.
We're done with
offer,
creativity.
Yeah, I don't think I could offer up any creative suggestions on a fourth song right now. You know,
you have a longer window than me.
Well, so Jacob Dietering, who's another guy you should probably hook up with, is a great guy. He came into me one time, and I really took it to heart. He came in, he's like, dude, I don't know how you do 10-hour days, and I've really reduced the whole like. Bust an ass for 10 straight hours to bust an ass for 8 straight hours, because he's like, man, you know, like 8 hours is really all I'm good for, and then I'm just kind of shutting down. And I totally respect that. And that's kind of where I've been lately in the last year or so, or maybe longer than that, of like, let's not work on anything really new. And if you do, it's on you, because, man, I don't know that I could take it in right now, because at the end of this hour and a half, of in the eighth hour, which we could call the 11th hour,
right.
You know, you busted out a brand new song for me, and then you're like, okay, let's listen to that first song again. Jason, what do you think? And I'm like, dude, I'm like trying to dump like three other songs out of my cache right now in my brain. And so there's a little bit of that, but some of that is trusting the musicians. And so a lot of the bands that I work with are folks that I trust, and word of mouth gets around that, like, I work quick, and that's fine. Preston works super fast, too. But
we work almost under orders in a way of like, okay, we need to do this and put a background vocal down. It's great. Another do would be punch lists are great. It's nice to have a punch list. It's not like militant to go, this is what I would like to accomplish today. If we don't have the time, that's fine. We can prioritize, but that's another good do.
Yeah.
You know, a don't would be, don't not know the songs without lyrics. That's well, something that needs sure. to be understood. Like, as a musician, I think you need to know that, like, you don't have to know measures, bars, beats per minute, or the notes you're playing, even. But it would be nice if you recognize that you play through that part four times, or three times. I do this three times. And then it's to that other part. Right. And we can code it.
Or with, like, Dan Ficicelli's band, like, 17 times, then we do a... Like
oh, yeah.
a 4.5 bar break, and then you know,
right,
we do
right.
another 2:15,
and then we count to 17, and yeah. then we do 16,
and then we go into triplets.
Right,
we do that triplets.
And to me, that's like, okay, can we code it a certain way? Can we call it a verse? Can we call it a pre-chorus? Can we call it a bridge? Can we call it a chorus, an intro, an instrumental, or whatever it is? Can we label it somehow so that all of us can talk about it in the same language? Sometimes that's, you know, something you've got to get over, in a way, is figuring out how the artist wants to dialogue or code
right.
their thing, you know. Like, I was working with this dude, Jeff Powell, who's a producer he was at Ardent Studios in Memphis for a while. But he came up and...
Cool studio.
Yeah, it's a great studio. But Jeff's yeah. now down at Sam Phillips' studio. He cuts vinyl now. He's
no
my
way.
Vinyl master.
Wait, where's he at?
Sam Phillips, old 1960s studio. Not
where, Nashville?
Yeah, no, Memphis.
Oh, Memphis.
Not Sunset Studios, Sam Phillips, but Sam Phillips' studio. It's like a proper place that he built in the 70s.
Huh.
It's super old school, but Jeff cuts to vinyl. But Jeff came up one time and he gave me shit. He was like, oh yeah, I forget, we're in St. Louis. You guys have a pre-chorus.
Huh.
You know, it's just a way of defining the four bars or the eight bars right before the chorus, which, like, Paul McCartney would probably call a bridge.
Well, let's say you it's know, a let's the say it's a 12 bar hook, right?
Right.
I think.
Yeah. No, because there's like a different chord progression that leads up to what would be the hook.
The words change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the setup to the chorus. I mean, I think it's justifiable. I think it happens a lot. Some bands are like, you know, I saw Jason Potter post it once, which was great. He goes, it was a post that he said, like, A, B, A, B, C, B, C, B, all day. And it was like, verse, chorus, right. bridge, chorus, done. All day. And that's what he meant. And I totally get that. But a lot of people are
hey,
like...
Hey, it's a formula for a reason. It works, you know?
Right.
And then you go into the bridge, and then you go... And then there's a pause, and then it goes into a way bigger hook, and done. And
right.
people, I mean, there's people who bring me songs, and I'm like, okay, I like your song. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to do it, instead of the way you wrote it, we're going to do it that way. And then they're like, you're a fucking genius. And I'm like, well,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not. I just did what everybody does that works.
Right. I call it trimming the fat.
Absolutely.
You
it's
know?
Like, this intro is 30 seconds. It's 12 seconds now.
Right, because it's the same thing twice.
Yeah,
or
we don't
like
need
that.
Two of those. Let's get into
yeah, yeah.
it by, like, 12 seconds in.
Or, like, a common one is after, you know, it's like intro, verse, pre-chorus maybe, chorus, and then back to the intro, and then second verse. And I'm like, let's get rid of that intro. Let's just go right into the second verse.
We'll make you that know? The outro.
Right. So that's
look,
what I
call
would
back.
Say is, like, a do and a don't would be, like, do know your arrangements. Don't not know your arrangement. Like, know it kind of well enough that, like, someone could go, hey, let's maybe try cutting the first chorus in half or not even doing the first chorus, you know, and, like, leaving a little. That's something like the band that you're repping right now, Fivefold.
Yeah.
They were in here years ago working on, you know, an early record. And, you know, Derek Husky's a great drummer. And it was great to, like, discover rhythm parts with him. And he recognized, like, it needs to have a definitive feel to a section, you know? And to where some guys are just kind of playing, they don't recognize that there's a pattern reoccurring.
You're checking your phone? Are we taking too long?
No,
we're talking
no,
too much?
No.
Okay, Factor Crap.
Factor Crap.
Yeah, all right.
Call in 555-5555 with your answer.
The boards are lighting up.
We'll just put them on hold until they all line
okay,
up.
Okay, I'm going to start with the easier one, but I actually didn't know this. Elton John. Well, I gave that away, huh? All right, never mind.
Elton John.
His real name is Reginald?
Yes, that's a fact.
Yeah, it is a fact.
That's a fact.
Yeah,
that's my Marissa Tomei.
It's not crap. Oh, yeah.
Because she does that in Cousin Vinny when she talks about the dual axle, like the dual posi traction.
Sure.
Anyway, Ralph Macchio was in it.
Yes. In My Cousin Vinny?
Yes.
Oh, he was the kid.
That right, got, he was the one
he was
apparently
on trial.
Shot, yeah.
I got this uncle. Okay. The planet Venus bends in the opposite direction of all the other planets.
Bends in the opposite direction?
Spins.
Like spins?
Yeah, spins.
Wow, it's just weird enough that it could be.
Yeah, maybe it's in the southern hemisphere.
Shane? Is it upside down?
Probably got
is it
upside
Australia?
Down. Yes. It's like the toilets.
Fact or crap, Shane?
I'll go fact.
Spins in the opposite direction. I'm going to say crap just to be opposite.
Shane got it.
Damn!
Apparently that's a
people,
fact.
People, you've learned like something. That's what you do here shouldn't at Software Studios. You learn shit that you didn't think you needed to know.
I consider it, an, even though on Google it's considered
Giggle?
An amusement
Giggle?
Park, I think.
Oh, yes.
Like if you look
Studios.
It up on Google, it comes up as an amusement park.
Or circus. I'm not sure yet.
I'd consider it more of an educational facility.
Right. We should get funded by the government. Not to this government.
No.
Not our current one. Because they wouldn't support the arts.
We can change the card game to fact. Alternative fact.
Alternative
or
fact
crap.
Or crap. No, fact or alternative fact.
Or alternative fact, yeah. And either way, you win.
Dude!
That's our $1 million idea.
How many cards are there? There's like 100 cards we're going to have to change. Alright, we're going to play Mad Gab later.
Yeah.
What else you want to know, Shane?
Oh,
how's it going, Shane?
Oh, I'm doing.
Have we ruined this show yet?
No. This is good stuff. Yeah.
Preston, where did you...
What's up?
Where did you start? Are you a St. Louisan?
I am a St. Louisan. I mean,
as like a baby,
I started out as a young
boy. I was a young white boy.
Yeah, is that how the jerk
is
starts?
Is that how the jerk starts? Yeah.
Well, I was at the jerk studio for here, and before here, and then when I was looking for somewhere to go, he had
no. Before that, you went to for school.
What's that?
Did you go to the
I lived out in Phoenix for a while. Yeah,
gotcha.
There's a place called the Conservatory out there.
Right on.
And then you
came back here, bounced around.
Bounced around for a bit. Ended up at a place and stayed there for way too long. And then ended up whenever I was about to leave the studio I worked at before there, Jason had a big open spot. And it worked out great, because I had people who needed to be recorded.
Dude, it blows me away
Jason had
how
a,
busy Preston is.
Big space that was...
Right. So we had both studios here. Jacob Dietering was here for a long
with
time.
Red
with Red
Pill. That's down on Hampton now, right?
Yeah.
Jacob I haven't been there yet.
It's a cool spot. It's a neat spot. It's got a really cool old trident in there.
I've seen the pictures. Yeah, it looks super cool.
Jacob knows what's up, man.
And I think Jacob, if I'm not mistaken, is teaching trident stuff at EI now.
I don't know about trident stuff, but he's teaching at EI, yeah. He's into mastering now, too.
I think EI bought a trident.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
So he's actually... Oh, I don't know.
He knows it, man. He services that pretty well. That's
I'm
his
sure.
baby.
Right.
That was a great find.
So I'm sure they couldn't find a better guy to... teach.
Yeah, yeah. And he's patient. That's huge.
Is he?
Yeah, he's a very patient individual. Way more... Like, I could definitely learn something from him. Like, coffee talks with him are educational. Because he processes very well, and he thinks, and he speaks very educationally, and he's a very bright guy.
I would find it hard to teach somebody, because, you know, you're doing something that you're used to doing at your speed, and then you have to slow it down and explain, and...
Yeah, I would find it difficult to teach because I feel like a lot of it is like, here are the notes. Now go just kind of jam in a way. And if you could equate that to the recording world, it's just kind of like,
right.
I don't know, throw up a mic and like
Try some shit. See,
what does this sound like, people will say? Like, what does that mic sound like?
It blows me away. All those Gear Sluts nerds.
Oh, gosh, the shit
What's
that comes
the best up. Mic I can buy?
Well, it's a U-47. Have you really heard a U-47?
Well, no, but this is what people say.
Right.
And it's supposed to sound like this, and the plug-in is... That's super cool, but it really has very little to do with the fact that the dude playing in front of the mic is so out of tune, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, there's things in front of that. But no, Jake was great. So Preston worked his way in, and it's like running pretty much Studio P over there.
Studio P.
And kills it over there, and... I would say sometimes a week you're putting more hours in than me, and then sometimes you're on vacation and I'm here. And
yeah, it depends on the week.
And sometimes we never see each other, and sometimes we see each other too much.
And sometimes we're both in the building for like 10 hours a day
and never see each other.
Yeah.
What have you been doing, man? Well, I've been about 20 feet away for 40 solid hours.
Yeah. Well, very cool. I guess we'll...
That's not it.
I want to keep going.
That's not it.
What do we have for 2000? What do you guys for 2017? You got?
Well, I'm gonna wait on phone calls, and when people call me, I'm gonna book them.
We have some big exciting releases coming out or anything.
Exciting releases.
You
know what? I never know.
You hit a lot of singles, so that shit's always popping.
Yeah, also, people set deadlines, and they say stuff's coming out, but they don't...
Right.
Yeah. Until stuff's final. Sure. And until there's the box from Discmakers with the CD. I don't like saying anything.
Yeah, it's kind of like when sessions come in, you don't want to mention them until they've actually passed through.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, yeah.
Then shout them out.
Yeah. Well, that was like for a shout-out, North Mississippi All-Stars came in. On a random,
North
Mississippi All Stars, it was open for Tedeschi Trucks, so they were here.
Luther. Oh, and it was a big bummer. Super Suckers was going to come in last month,
dude. They're on the schedule.
No way.
Spaghetti Eddie's coming in to play bass.
Oh, I got
to
be here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Super Sucker. Do you know who they are?
I don't think so.
Kind of a rockabilly-ish. They're from Austin, and they have a record label. They're a pretty cool band, and they were supposed to come in last month. Right when, do you remember? I think it was Friday the 16th. Because my car got screwed up that day. Well, I remember the day.
Oh, you were bummed.
But, but they were supposed to come in.
It was the winter storm.
That winter storm. And nobody was going out because the roads were all icy.
And the people that I had coming up were in middle Illinois. So, we'll get a group of... That's the nice thing about having all the players we have is, like, they reach out. Like, we had the background singer for James Taylor in last week. Bass player for John Mayer was, cutting tracks. And in fact, we're cutting drum tracks tomorrow for that singer of James Taylor's new record.
That's cool.
That's what Miles is doing tomorrow.
Miles is doing drums?
Miles is engineering it. The drummer's coming in. He's a hired gun. So out of the blue, when I was working on Adam Hookey's record, I get a call from the North Mississippi All-Stars, or an email. Hey, we need to book the studio, next Tuesday, are you available? Yeah, of course, I'm available. Hey, Adam Hookey, All-Stars might want to come in. Is it okay if we bounce, for that night? Well, they couldn't figure out the schedule. So last Friday, I happened to be perusing the concert calendar, and I see that the North Mississippi All-Stars are playing at Peabody. So I hit up Luther Dickinson, one of the guitar players, singer-songwriters in it. And I was like, yo, I know we misconnected last time. I got some time available that morning or Thursday if you wanted to come in during the day. Dude, love it. We would love to come cut some tracks with you. So they come in and there's a trio and just cut live for like 4 hours. And we got a couple tracks that ended up on their next record.
Nice.
And then they jetted at like 3:30, went to the Peabody, played a killer show. I got great seats to that. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And I had never heard Tedeschi Trucks Band either, which just smokes. I have a new crush on her.
Yeah.
She's killer. But it's crazy kind of the word of mouth that gets around when, we were talking earlier about how it's a quiet studio. We don't really promote. We don't advertise. We don't talk about, we've got a deal today, we don't support, I wouldn't say support, but we don't go for the talent show type thing. I feel like that's a gimmick to try to get a band in and do less work so that they have to spend more with you. I just want to work with the bands that want to come in, cut records, whether it's one song or 10, but collaboratively work together and knock something out of the park, you know, right. And be creative with it and do what's right for them. I don't want to create something that's not them. So All Stars come in, and Luther was just digging it. He was like, so what do you wind up doing here? I was like, we do a lot of R&B and soul and rock and roll, you know. And he's like, dude, do you cut like this a lot? I'm like, 90% of the time we're cutting live, sometimes vocals live, you know, with like I said, Funky Butt's coming in this weekend, and we'll be cutting for two or three days, nothing but live, with horns, piano in the room, drums in the room, sousaphone in the room. Probably we'll backdoor the drum or the vocal parts, what we call hero vocals, the special vocal parts, the lead vocal stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be like Emily Wallace with Sleepy Rubies. That was a great record. Yeah. She's getting tons of recognition.
Yeah, I love that record.
Yeah, Jeremiah Johnson's killing it. The Kevin Bowers record, if you haven't heard it, is super cool. Adam Hookey's new one coming out is going to be awesome. And then you're hip to like the Aaron Cam and the One Drops. I think there was a request talking about like some of the people that have been in quite a bit here. Aaron Cam, I think I've done 4 records for him now. And every time it blows me away how efficient they are and how good players they are. And they come in and, you know, I'll be like, you know, he's like, you ready to go? And I'm like, yeah, of course. I hit record. And it's quiet for a minute or two. It's just dead quiet. And they're all just kind of chilling, getting focused. And then they'll just rip a 6-minute tune.
Yeah.
And it just kills, vocals and all. And it's done. It's all done, but maybe the specialty kind of mixing sugar and spice. And even then, they'll leave with that mix, and Aaron and the boys are like, I don't know what you really want to do to dress this up, man. It's smoking right now. And, you know, we have a hard time sometimes figuring out, like, we'll take a stab at a new mix, you know, and we'll see what happens. But it's great. And a lot of the projects are like that, you know.
Did you do the Feed the Meter record they did, the one they released?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that one, I mean, I've been following those guys for a long time, but that Feed the Meter, man, that was just a lot more soul and R&B influence in there.
Yeah, but we brought in Nate Hershey playing B3 on that, right? And then some horn stuff.
Yeah, Adam and Aaron played some horn stuff on it from Funky Butt.
Well, just to rattle my own cage here, that was a lot of me going, all right, guys, we've done 2 or 3 of these records now, and you guys are a great trio, but can we Marley this up a little bit was the word that I used. To make Marley a verb. But I was like, dude, there's like these tunes that you could get B3 on and nobody's going to be pissed if they don't hear it live. You can get horns on these parts and no one's going to be bummed out. And God love them if they come to you and they're like, hey, man, I didn't hear that tambourine part on your set live. They fucking listen to the record, you know. That's great that someone's vested in a record that much.
Yeah.
But I just want to make a song that's really cool. And if we can... I'm not going to say the word cheat, but if we can push the envelope a little bit and add a little spice to it that doesn't have to be there, that's why I want to do a record. I don't want to do a record so that someone hears you live and then they get that same result live. I want someone to hear a record and go see you live. And they're not going to be bummed that certain vocals aren't going to be there.
Right. Well, they've done, with Halloween, I think, or somewhere right around there, Aaron Cam played Delmar Hall and had Funky Butt horns with him. So
smart to do that.
Yeah, so you get like a special occasion where you get like the full record sound like that.
Right.
You know, you might not always get it, but it's nice to have those nights like that.
It's nice when an artist will kind of take to heart what your opinion is. Like, you should add a guitar part here. You should do this. And the time it takes to talk about maybe doing it, you could almost lay it down and go, does it work or not?
You can always erase it.
Yeah, you can always erase it.
Yeah.
You're saying you're doing a lot more of the hip-hop, pop, R&B, and all, right?
Yeah, mostly vocals. Mostly vocal stuff. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I played in a bunch of punk bands around town and stuff, but there's something with pop music where you can, first of all, the engineering has to be really perfect. When you're talking pop music, you know, it's there's not a lot of room for error. I mean,
yeah.
Well, I have an 11-year-old girl, and she listens to a lot of, like, Meghan Trainor and sure. Kesha and, like, you know, little girl stuff, which, regardless of what you think of the music, the engineering's great, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun to listen to. Just, if you want to make somebody sound, you know, if you have a new effect you want to try out and make something real weird, you can kind of do that. But, you know, with punk and rock, it's hard to...
Sure.
Really try a lot of new effects without going all the way electronic with it. You know, if you have a lot of the bands I've been in, it's just kind of straight
right, keep,
rock.
Keep it raw, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Even a keyboard's a little experimental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but with the pop stuff, it's a lot of fun,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. What, yeah, man, we were kind of saying a little bit off mic, but there is this, you know, St. Louis is known as a rock and blues and stuff, but we do have a real strong hip-hop community coming up. There's a lot of...
Sure. Well, there has been. And there's also... there's a lot of really talented people that don't necessarily have a big following,
right.
You know? But there's a lot of talent in town, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the names that you would recognize... I've worked with most... the names in town, and they're not necessarily the stuff that's the most progressive.
Yeah,
you know,
underground, you could call it
underground. Yeah, a lot of the underground stuff's really cool here in town.
For sure, man. Yeah, there's and this is the thing. You know, you see, especially with the internet, that people can get develop a following on their own. You know.
Sure. There's whole artists that develop an online
right.
Following that
Mark, yeah.
don't even really play a lot of shows,
yeah.
you know?
Sure.
That pick and choose.
I think
blogs are pretty powerful
yeah.
as far as getting somebody's name out nationwide, you know? There's a lot of outlets that I don't know that all the artists explore. I mean, the college...
Exploit it, yeah.
Yeah. The college stuff is huge, which... gets overlooked by the mainstream.
Yeah.
But that's where the next mainstream people come from a lot of times.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like some people get discovered because of how unique and simple they are, and then they get thrust to the forefront, and then other people catch on and they try to create something simple and similar like that.
Sure.
And then there are those innovators that are just like, whatever they want to do, they do, and it blows up.
Sure.
And then there are like...
Well, and a lot of people are out here chasing the modern thing, and by the time that they're chasing it and get to record songs that sound like that, like that's already done. You know, it's on to the
yeah.
next thing. It's so fast nowadays,
yeah.
which it's kind of wild how these
which
people come up and get millions of hits on YouTube. You know, I've done several songs that have gone over 3 million hits, which I feel...
Huge
number.
That's a great
number.
And
then, you know, next thing you know, it's on to the next thing.
Yeah. They were like, yeah, that was only 3 million. We need to, you know, so and so. Because they're judging themselves against something.
Sure.
As opposed to as a result of their own personal accomplishments.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like there's a lack, if I could say something about the scene.
In St. Louis?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lack of knowledge on how to get music further than a clip on Facebook
sure.
or a clip on YouTube that people don't go to.
Well,
it's almost like there's no controversy being created as a result of it, which is a problem. Like, I almost wish somebody would say something wrong so they can get more attention, you know, to them.
Yeah.
Like, I've often joked...
Any publicity is good publicity.
In a way, yeah. Now. But there's a right way of doing it. Like, let's use our last president as a result. Like, Obama that ran on the HOPE campaign, right? Or Make America Great Again with Trump, whatever. Let's suppose you have a song that is something along those lines, you know, even remotely. Scott Bryan's a perfect example. He had a song called Change. And we always joked about, like, dude, Scott, you should come up with like a 30-second bumper of great Obama
photos or video clips, just a quick little 30-second bumper, and call it like Barack Obama Loves Change by R. Scott Bryan. And it's a video of Scott Bryan doing his song Change with fucking video clips of Obama. And
you'll hit those keywords.
And people will hit those keywords because they love, maybe they love Obama, maybe they love Change, maybe they love Scott Bryan, whatever. And they go to it. And maybe the Obama camp goes to Scott and says, hey, dude, like, this isn't our thing. You know, take it down. Totally cool. Take it down. But in the meantime, you have this like, crazy press that might be happening as a result of it. But do it in a tasteful way to where maybe it would be accepted by them. Like, do use your song in a Coke commercial. Mock up a fucking Coke commercial. Just strip the audio. Do your own voiceover. Do your own music and put it out there. If Coca-Cola tells you to take it down, somebody was watching you. Use it and be like, Coca-Cola told us to take this down. Bulletin. Whenever, put it out there. Like,
whenever I'm recording stuff that people want to use copyrighted material for, whether it's somebody else's music bed or whether it's, I did a song about LeBron James not too long ago, and they wanted to take NBA clips and use that kind of in between parts of the song, and it got yanked.
Audio?
Yeah audio. Like, of big moments mm-hmm. in LeBron James' career.
Right. So there was an announcer?
There was an announcer. Got yanked within the first 2 hours.
Yeah. It's crazy the trolls that are watching that stuff.
Right. But, I mean,
in a way, you know you've got someone's attention.
You got somebody's attention.
And there's, yeah. I feel like there might be a...
And I tell my clients that when they ask me about the legality, it's like, if you're on the radar of people wanting you to take it down, like, it might not be the worst thing. I mean, I'm not telling
people
to break the law.
You're not doing anything offensive. Like, don't do it in poor taste.
Right. But if you want to use a little sample of something...
Try it.
Yeah. And if you've got your song to the level that it's going to get on somebody's radar, you're probably doing okay.
Right.
Maybe.
Like, I won't say...
If you have lawyers coming after you...
Right. You're not going to get lawyers coming after you. You're not
Unless you're making money.
Right. And in which case, so if you're making money, as I've always said to some of the bands that we talk about points or whatever on records, like, oh, McIntyre, you're going to want a point on this or whatever else... I'm like, I'm not even worried about that. When everybody's making money, we'll talk about making money. Like the 1% that I'm going to get on your mix or your song is irrelevant until you're making money. Like, at that point, everybody's making money. Why would you complain about getting 1%?
At that point, they're going to be like, Jason, who?
Right. It's come up before, though.
Is that your phone going
off? It is.
Well, that's how professional. I put mine on.
I'll put it closer so you know how important I am.
Well, that's kind of mean, you know, though.
I'm just going to start answering my phone calls on speakerphone. My phone right here.
Make it really, or turn your volume up really loud so everybody can hear it and hold it far away from your ear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And call it your manager. And then the other thing I have to
I'm
say.
I'm just going
to
hand you my phone and you'll be like, Preston's office?
Preston Jones. Oh, no, I'm not Preston. I'm Preston's Preston.
Right.
I always find it funny when a band or an artist that's here or whatever, when a phone rings, it's like an internal clock. That starts before, when are they going to say, I'm at the studio? Like, and a lot of times it's like the first 5 seconds. They're like, hey, what's going on? I'm at the studio.
Right.
It's like, you got to know you're at the studio. I'm working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make it short.
What's up? I'm at the studio. What are you doing, man? Nothing, man. I'm at the studio. Yeah, it always is a mental clock that goes off before, like, when they answer that phone.
I call them out on it.
Yeah, a don't is don't bring your fucking phone into the tracking room.
Right.
That's a don't. Stop looking at it like it's a time lapse of your day.
Oh, a good don't bring your girlfriend because she doesn't care. And
she's not an opinion that you should care about.
No, yeah, her opinion doesn't matter. And also, she's going to fall asleep on this couch because it's a very comfortable couch.
Yes.
You have a very nice couch, Jay. And your girlfriend's going to be asleep right there. And
right. Don't bring
you'll never bring her back.
Yeah.
Oh, parents are the worst.
We get occasionally young artists.
I get to
deal
with parents more than you do. I would think.
Yeah, you do.
And you do a take, and they're like, "That was great."
Yeah.
It's like, no, it wasn't great. It wasn't great. Like,
let me work here, Mom.
Right. And then you do another take. That was better. Okay. All right. shut up.
Right. You can't say it like that.
You can't. Yeah, yeah. Because most of the time they're paying for it. So you don't want to yell at the person.
But you know, it's interesting. It's like if you were a carpenter going in to do trim work on their house, like they're going to stand over your shoulder and go, "That miter joint's awesome."
Right.
Good miter joint. You know, it's like let those folks do the job that they do. Like in a way, like I have this school. Like when somebody comes in to work, I have school rock kids that come in.
Yeah.
And so they come in and there's one parent. And I won't mention the school rock band. They're smoking players because Jordan Heimberger does a great job, and Molly Sims, they do a killer job out there teaching them kids. Everybody out there. But we've got them in cutting records now. And, man, there's some smoking artists out there. But occasionally, parents will come in. And, you know, there's the term momagers, you know, for managers and, you know, all that stuff. And it's legitimate. It's out there. And they don't know that they do it, you know, so bless them or whatever you want to say. But, man, it's like at some point, you know, you have to remember that you're, as an engineer, Preston and I, we're adults too, and they're not the first person we've seen cut a record. And so it's great to be positively motivated for this, but it doesn't do any good for the artists sometimes to know that, like, they have to kind of get pushed a little bit.
Sure.
Like, I don't...
You probably wouldn't want your mom standing right there while you're doing the podcast.
Great question, Shane. Great question. Good job, Shane. Good one. I like how you worded that. I've had it before where they come in and they're like, "That was a great take, boys." And I'm like, no, the bridge was a little fucked up. Can we go back? And I'm not... Especially with those young artists... I'm not one that will chop it up in the digital domain. And a lot of you guys know what I'm talking about. Pro tooling.
I will. I'll chop it up all day.
No.
It's what I do.
You don't. You wouldn't with these kids either. Because I think, like, there's a time when I remember, like, being in a young band. When you were you in young punk bands or whatever, when you recorded? And it was a shitty fucking recording.
The shittier it was, I mean, the more legit it is.
Right.
So.
Right, and so part of me is, I'm not saying I'm going to let them get away with a shitty recording, but when they come in, like, I know there was a mess up, and going into the bridge, or in that chorus, the bass player screwed up, it's like, hey, we need to go back and fix that part. Like, we're going to punch it in. I'm not going to, like, nudge it around in the digital world and Photoshop it, so to speak. Like, they have to realize that there's work involved in it. When we get down the road, and there's time and budget and numbers that they're really working towards, that... You know, they don't have to necessarily look back on. Like, I'm game for whatever they want to do. If they want to punch it in, that's fine.
Sure.
But there's some guys that, like, sit back on the couch and they're like, "Oh, I was a little off of that entrance, McIntyre. Hey, Mac, can you wizard that for me?" And they're like, "You're a wizard." I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm just kind of..."
I can only work with what you give me.
Yeah, it's not that great. But these youngsters that come in, man, I want them to, like, when they go home at night, I want them to listen to that record and go, I played it. That was me. I'm not going to chop up...
And that's so cool.
That dude's drum part. I'm not going to mess with that girl's bass part. Like, she's 15 and is smoking already. I'm not going to give her some crazy enhanced idea of what she did.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have to know that some people pay the studio time for that work. You know?
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean...
I'm sure you get that, like, with singers that, like, no, they're not, like, a cappella vocalists to do, like... ultimate crazy harmony parts, but they want it to sound a certain way.
Sure.
So you'll do what you need to do to create the sound.
Yeah. I don't know how much I can talk on mic about some projects, but there's...
The mic's off right now. We're not recording.
Oh, good.
This is
that red light means that red light means off.
It's standby.
That's standby.
This is just practice.
There's...
just practice what you would say.
Sure, okay.
So there are some people that come in that... can't do anything well, and so...
Well, it's not that they can't do anything well. That need more direction than others.
Yeah.
And sometimes, if you give them a couple takes, they'll get it.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to coerce sounds like terrorist tactics. Coerce?
Yes, like you're trying water torture?
Yeah, water torture.
Yeah, I do that a lot. Like, well, so one tactic
sometimes
would be to heat up the room.
Yeah,
make the room warmer.
Yeah, play.
So they feel
real
like
loud.
It's more tense in there.
What's a really bad song that you can play at them?
Any song they're trying to compare it to. I want it to sound like...
I want it to sound like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
And so you find the worst parody song ever of Chili Peppers?
Yeah.
No, like, I was...
I thought there was a lawsuit because they were playing music at Prisoners in Guantanamo?
They were playing Creed?
Was it Creed?
Probably.
Might have been Creed. Sure.
Probably.
Why wouldn't it have been?
Probably.
Well, I just heard...
No, have you heard, everybody out there, if you haven't Googled Scott, what's his name, Scott?
Scott Stapp.
Stapp.
Yeah.
Doing the Florida Marlins song.
Is Scott Stapp the Creed guy?
He's the Creed singer.
Okay.
Look up Scott Stapp, Florida Marlins. It's incredible.
Yeah. I always...
there was a studio somewhere that was paid to do that.
I always laugh thinking of him because there's a...
A porn?
There's a great David Cross story about...
That's funny.
David Cross is great. Yeah. I liked his independent TV show where he lies about everything.
I'm not sure.
No, that's John Lovitz.
Oh.
So anyway, sorry.
He's like, you know, gone on record on his specials and everything talking about how much he hates Scott Stapp and Creed and all this stuff or whatever, and he was telling a story about that he got like seated next to him in one of those like celebrity poker game things or whatever like that, you know. And he's like, oh hey, what's up, man? He's like, and then you know, Scott's like, yeah, I heard what you said or something, like, you know.
Oh, I heard what you said about me.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, okay, well, this is, you know, this got awkward, you know. It's like,
yeah, I'd be constantly overbidding him.
Yeah, right.
I'd be playing a little pressure poker with that dude.
The increasingly bad decisions of Todd Margaret's, what the show is called. But this is a poker game?
Yeah, some kind
That's
of...
That's funny. David Cross and poker.
One of those celebrity poker...
He'd be pretty tournaments. Funny, I bet, as a poker opponent.
Yeah. He's a funny guy. Well,
Right on, dude. Did we wear you out?
So we're about halfway done, right?
Yeah.
Right, so we can start recording now.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, let's do this. Let's do this interview, man.
Yeah.
How do you want to intro this?
We'll get ready. We'll just, you know.
So you want to do the intro now?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and start with the intro.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Then the pre-chorus.
This is, right.
Hi, this is Preston from Sawhorse. And,
hey, you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
And we have Jason McIntyre and...
Preston Jones.
And, of course, Shane Presley. Hello. And we're,
We're here in SoCo.
SoCo,
Dutchtown.
Dutchtown. We're broadcasting live from Dutchtown.
All right, let's do that again, guys. Ready?
All right.
Hey, how you doing, everybody?
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
I'm doing well. Preston, how are you, Shane?
I'm great, man.
What are we doing today?
We're here with Jason, Rock, Preston, and the Weasel.
And the Weasel with Rock Paper Podcast.
Okay, one more time.
All right, one
minute. And
sleep. All right. Hey, everybody, how you doing?
Shit.
All right. Fuck it.
That was real exciting.
All right. All right. So we got to do this or what?
Yeah.
All right.
Guess so.
You got bumper music here? Is that one of your sound effects? I want the David Lee Roth. Like, oh yeah! Have you ever heard those the sound bar?
I don't think so.
It's like, it was all the Running with the Devil. It was a sound ball. It was a whole acapella web page. It was just all of his little outtakes. Like, God damn it, baby, I know I ain't lying to you. I'm going to hit you one more time. Ah! It was like all the outtakes of Running with the Devil. It was great on like a little clipboard.
There's like a 35-minute long sound clip of...
Let me tell you. That was one. I did that perfectly, by the way. Let me tell you.
It's all of Michael Jackson's albums. Oh! So, yeah, it's just that. Like...
What's crazy, like, have you seen some of those overdub sessions from, like, the We Are the World stuff? It's Quincy Jones and the engineer, Shelly, I can't think of his name, but they're...
Shelly's a him?
Yeah.
Okay.
He did the Thriller record and Off the Wall, I think, as well. But Quincy Jones is in there, and Michael's in there doing the lead vocals to We Are the World. And, you know, he's like, two feet from his U87, you know, from his mic, and he does his, like, we are the world, you know, and they're like, okay, Mike, two steps back, and you see him, like, take two steps back, like, over guitar cables and stuff, and he does the exact same thing, hand in his pocket, and he's like, we are the world, and they're like, cool, let's do one more, another two steps back, and he backs up, he's, like, moving around, shit, we are, the hand in his pocket, you know. It's amazing. It's like, wow, they must have been running like two 24-track machines on that shit. Because digital was not around.
That's
the shit I missed. That's a whole other episode.
Yeah.
Is like, what would you do if digital didn't exist?
Right.
Like, how many of these bands would exist if the digital world didn't exist?
Well, there's a lot of guys that I talked to around here recently, like Al Holiday. Mm-hmm. He cut his to tape and then slept.
He cut it here.
Yeah. So, yeah, I went tape to vinyl and...
Yep, Jeff Powell, the guy I mentioned earlier, he's the one who cut it to vinyl. Yeah,
so there's a lot of people still keeping a lot of that older recording to...
Didn't Javier?
I've got a lot of old, like, early 2000s. It's so funny to say that's old. The 2000s. Considering it started in 94. There's some Javier stuff here, too. But we'll cut to tape if the band recognizes that it's kind of that, like the Feed, Dave Gorelli, Ben Reese, and Kevin Bowers. Those dudes are like, we're cutting to tape. And now, sometimes I don't recognize that they want to do it because they don't want me to edit, or they just want the sound. Sometimes I don't think they know what the sound of tape is. Like, oh, it's warmer. It's not warmer. It's less bright. Like, semantics, but...
Kinda. Yeah.
You were going to say?
No. Oh, you mentioned the Feed, and who else was in the Feed before the Feed's current lineup?
So the current lineup is Jordan Heimberger.
Was Nate in the Feed?
No. It was always Dave Gorelli, Kevin Bowers, and Ben Reese. And Ben would double on bass and sax. And then they added guitar of Jordan Heimberger, who you did an interview recently with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a bit.
Wait, who's that?
Jordan Heimberger, who plays with Jimmy Griffin, the Incurables. He's a teacher at School of Rock.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Is School of Rock in Kirkwood?
And Manchester.
Baldwin.
All in Manchester, yeah.
Oh, cool.
He's a crazy talented guy. Very well spoken. Can speak better than I, for sure, on so many things. Like, he's a great interview. He stays focused. You and I, Preston, we'll just go off on tangents. Jordan has an agenda, it sounds like.
That's cool.
I don't like agendas. I don't even know what that means.
So his brain works right.
Left brain or right brain?
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
we're both leaving.
Sorry, do we need to sign off?
Are we going to leave him?
So we're leaving him by himself. I walk out, and he just needs to continue talking.
Just fade out.
All right. So these are our steps walking away. Yeah. And you can do your sign.
Have a good night, Shane.
All right, Shane. Lock up when you're done.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.